Welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Today's episode is powered by TD Ameritrade. Every stroke counts on the scorecard and every penny counts in the market. That's why TD Ameritrade is committed to straightforward pricing with no surprises. So you're free to swing with confidence. Visit tdameritrade.com/friedegg. Member SIPC. We are back with a new episode of the Fried Egg Podcast. Today, I am joined by managing editor of the Fried Egg, Garrett Morrison. Garrett and I just got back from a trip through North Carolina and South Carolina. We hit up a couple courses, and we're going to break them down for you today. This will be a two-parter. So in part one, we will cover Old Town Club and Reynolds Park in Winston-Salem. And before part three, we jump over to Roaring Gap, Aiken, and Palmetto. Without further ado, here is Garrett Morrison.
I miss a green, for example. I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
Fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Garrett, what's happening up in Oregon?
A lot of rain, a lot of gray skies, not much golf, but you know, I don't really play golf when I'm at home anymore. It's just on trips.
Yeah, that's kind of
just not terrible.
My life too.
It's yeah, exactly.
I've been traveling a ton though lately, so it's just nice being home in general.
Yeah, you've been away a lot more than you've been home, right?
Yeah, it's been bad. I'm gonna enact a travel ban here in November. It's gonna be mandatory home time. So it's a
Friday travel ban.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But so we were together though. We playing more Perry Maxwells. You know, it seems like the only time we're gonna be together, just playing Perry Maxwells.
It's not terrible. But it has been a very Perry Maxwell summer for sure. We've traveled to play a few of his courses, and they've all been awesome.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they. I mean, I'm in a deep love affair with Perry Maxwell now, which is it's not a bad thing. But it's just amazing how few people talk about him. I'm just amazed in general.
Yeah. Why do you think that is?
I think. You know, the more I think about it, is like he didn't design any golf course in New York or California.
Yeah, you think it's that simple that
or the
people
Northeast.
Just
yeah
don't really get to them.
I mean, it's just like if you compare it to like anything, like sports, or all the coverage goes to like the New York teams and the LA teams because they have huge markets, right?
Yeah.
And he didn't design anything in Chicago. He didn't design anything in any of the biggest cities in the country.
That's right. Yeah.
And then nobody gives him the credit he deserves for Augusta.
Very true as well, right? Everybody wants to talk about Mackenzie and Bobby Jones there because they're sort of romantic figures, but a ton of those greens are Perry Maxwell greens, and they're very, very good.
Yeah, so we were at before we went to the Thoroughbred, which was at Aiken, and we can talk a little bit about Aiken and Palmetto. We did Winston-Salem, so we did Reynolds Park and Old Town Club, and then we drove up, which are both Perry Maxwell courses. Reynolds Park is the municipal golf course in Winston-Salem. And then we drove up to Roaring Gap, which is a Donald Ross in the mountains. So let's just kick it off by starting to talk about Reynolds Park. This was, I guess I saw Mooresville too in Charlotte, which is a Donald Ross, Chris Spence project, which good, you know, affordable place to play that's close to Charlotte. You know, I think it's not something I would go out of my way to go play, but it's a very good public option for golf. It's got really interesting land on the front nine, which is the Ross original nine, and you can just the course added nine holes in the 60s. It's really interesting to see just the difference in the routing in terms of like how intimate and close together the front nine is and how it uses the land. And then you go to the back nine and it's basically like cut out of a forest, you know, and every hole is its own hole, own corridor. Like you can't see anything else going around. I mean, you can tell that Chris didn't have a ton of stuff to work with on that back nine when he was doing his redesign, because the corridors were so narrow. There were homes that had been added. You know, it was really an interesting juxtaposition. But a really nice course, good shape. It's walkable. I would recommend it. I'd go play there again if I flew into Charlotte and had an afternoon, or if I lived there. It's a really good place to play for public golf.
Right, and that's Morrisville.
Morrisville. Okay. It's like it's about 25 minutes north of Charlotte. So
cool.
Need to go back and do a proper Charlotte tour, but I just needed something quick in the afternoon to go see, and that one checks some boxes.
Right. What you're describing just there with the Ross nine and then another nine added to it struck me as very similar to Thendara, which a guest author, Colin Chris, wrote about on our website not too long ago, where you have this intimate sort of interlocking routing with a kind of open plan contrasted with a later nine that goes through the woods. It seems like there's not just one place where that's the case. But obviously one of them is a little more fun to play than the other.
Yeah, I mean, I think you see it all over the place too. Like with Langford and Moreau, they built a lot of nine-hole courses in the Midwest, and then you see them add another nine. You know, these courses add another nine in the 1960s, 70s. You know, you go down the list, like there's a course in LaPorte, Indiana called Legacy Hills, and the front nine is all original Langford Moreau, and it's really could be something else. Like it's amazing, because I had an old aerial, and you can see the shadowing because of how deep some of these bunkers were, and you can just see this like intense shadowing on like a 1940 aerial, which is crazy. And then they added a nine, you know, you got like raised ponds, and it weaves through a housing development, and it's just like that covers three times the amount of land that the front nine does, and it's far less interesting golf, in my opinion, you know.
Right, pretty typical story. So I was in the air flying out to Charlotte when you were looking at that course. And the next day we drove out toward Winston-Salem, where before going to the Wake Forest campus in Old Town, we stopped by Reynolds Park, which is a municipal course designed by Perry Maxwell. And I think it's safe to say that we are both blown away by what we found there, right?
Yeah, that was... I'd been looking at Reynolds Park for like 2 years on Google Maps. And you know, obviously, the one thing that never shows is topography. And I had no clue what we were going to find there. And it was stunning. It just jumped to the top of near the top, or the top of the list of golf courses that I want to see restored.
Yeah, ultra dramatic land. There are kind of two general sections of the course. They're not separated by nines. It's more like there are six holes on one side of the highway, and then there are the other 12 holes on the other side.
Yeah, it's like 1, 2, 3 play, and then you cross the road, and then it finishes the nine, and then the back nine's all on that other side.
Right. And where the back nine is I think where we both started to really see some classic Perry Maxwell stuff, the way the holes went right over the boldest features in the land. Both sides of the road were really cool. I think that there has been more modern intervention on the other side of the road with the front nine, but still just the obviously it's an overused term, but the sheer scale of the land is incredibly impressive. And there are some holes out there that are just completely unique looking to my eye. It was really, really exciting to see that there. Obviously it needs some work, it needs some support, but what a cool golf course.
Yeah, it's like one of my favorite things about just going to these golf courses. Like, you never know what to expect, and we went there on I think it was a Tuesday morning. It was like kind of gray and windy.
Not good light for taking photos. No. I mean,
course was packed though. It was filled with golfers. And we ended up we parked and we went over and we were on the holes, the section that's holes 4 through 9. And we just started walking around, and I think like we got over the hill and both of us were just like, holy cow. Couldn't believe what was like what unfolded down in front of us. And you know, you're walking around that side, I was, you know, and you can see that the bunkers have been messed around with, but then, you know, there were a few greens out there that like were distinctly Maxwell greens, where you saw his rolls, or as Dunlop White, who at Old Town Club coined muffins, in the greens. And it was just like, God, how's nobody talk about this place? Like, and it just was an amazing place in terms of for somebody that dreams about what it could be. And I you know, I'm guilty of being a golf course dreamer.
Well, with that one, it's completely legitimate to dream about what it could be, because there are a lot of courses where that dreamers are attracted to, where you're just never going to get back what was there, and it's almost fruitless to try to pursue it. But at Reynolds Park, you wouldn't really need to do much. It's basically all still there. I think a lot of what the course needs probably has to do with deferred maintenance, but it's a cool course already, and there's not much that would need to happen to it in order to make it instantly one of the best municipal courses in the country, in my opinion. But yeah, the greens, a lot of the greens are still there. In fact, it's stunning, some of the stuff that's still there, because there are some really quirky moves in that design. And a lot of that is intact, maybe because somebody just preserved it, or maybe through a process of benign neglect. But when you walk around, you really see what that design was. It was funny. I was out there, you know, looking at the back nine and just taking some photos and really getting into it. And I was approached by the superintendent of the course, a guy named Ryan McLannan. And he asked me what I was doing. And I told him, and he was really, really nice guy. And he was like, yeah, I was just afraid we've had some problems recently with kids coming out here and playing Pokemon Go. And I was wondering if you're one of those people. But once he found out what I was doing, he was super welcoming, and we were totally free to just kind of walk around the place. But that's kind of the vibe of the place, very casual, and it's part of the community.
Who knew? Who knew? It was quite a hotbed for Pokemon Go.
Apparently. Yeah.
Not only is it something that could be a great golf course, it also is a regular spot for people searching for Pokemon.
Right. Yeah. Who needs foot golf when you have a Pokemon venue?
That place, I think both of us were walking around that one side, the first side we were on, which is 4 through 9, and we were like, this is unreal. And I personally was expecting to cross the road and see something like way different. And it turned out to be like way better, worlds better on the other side of the road.
Right. Yeah. We thought we had seen the good stuff when we saw the front nine or the six holes on that side of the road, but the good stuff really is on the other side, that the 10th hole out there, the 17th hole, just going over these big contours, these kind of waves in the land that you see Maxwell going directly over on a lot of his best courses. You can see the routing, you can see the holes as they were designed. It's a pretty exciting place.
There's a spot where the kind of the low point on that side of the land is in the corner of the property, and both the 13th and the 17th play down into it from different angles, and the greens are just benched one on top of the other. The 13th sits just slightly above it on a ridge, and then the 17th plays under it down on another ridge. And it's just like that spot, I'm just like, holy, like, you know, that was where I turned and looked. I was just like, my God, I cannot believe this place exists.
Yeah.
It
was great. I'd love to go back there actually and dig in some more, but we might have some stuff coming up on that. We did get some pictures and hopefully I'll be able to write something about it eventually.
Yeah, we got to figure out what's going on with the management situation, because it's just a place that it's begging for restoration. And you talk about all the great municipal courses, and I mean, I guess to put it into perspective for somebody, it's got land like. The land is very similar to Bethpage Black's land, but it's Perry Maxwell with really interesting greens. Like in terms of the muscular, it's not as expansive in the routing, how Bethpage Black covers just a ton of property. It's more intimate. But in terms of the movement and the ridges and you're hitting up, and you're teeing off from ridges down and hitting down. It, in terms of the sheer up elevation movement, it would be similar to that, but in a much more intimate setting for golf, where especially if they did tree removal, you'd see all across the golf course on the from holes 1 through 3 and 9 through 18, you could see everybody basically everywhere.
Right. Yeah. And when Jeff Shackelford talks about how one of the great things that the USGA could do would be to help generate funds to restore and renovate great city municipal courses, I think Reynolds Park is absolutely the perfect candidate for that, because as I said earlier, you wouldn't have to do much. The land is still there, the routing is still there, many of the greens are still there. It would just take a little bit to push that place over the top. I can think of a few other courses in a few other cities that are similar and would benefit similarly from that kind of program, but Reynolds Park really is the perfect example of a course that would benefit from that.
A place that reminds me too, like that in that same vein, would be, there's a Stanley Thompson designed Sleepy Hollow in Cleveland that's unbelievable. Yeah. Too. Like similar state, where it's just sitting there and, you know, really great land and really great design. Because nothing had ever happened really bad, it's still just there, you know? Which is, you know, I've talked to so many architects that have said that. Like, sometimes the best thing that can happen is never having money to screw it up. And Reynolds Park, it probably falls into that bucket.
Yeah, definitely. Isn't there a municipal Ross course out in Cleveland as well?
Yeah, Manikiki. It's really good, too.
That's right.
Yeah. I think Sleepy Hollow's got a lot more potential, but they're both really, really good. Like, where... I always think of it this way. It's like if they turned into a private club and got to do a restoration, like, man, there's a chance Sleepy Hollow would be the best course in all of Cleveland.
Yeah. Well, there was a time when a lot of the best terrain for golf around cities was used for municipal courses. right? There was a time when these tracts of land that had huge potential specifically for golf were actually devoted to golf. And that time is that's no longer the time we live in, right? We have to look elsewhere for that land now. But that's why these municipal courses, these city courses built in the 1920s and especially in the 1930s in the era of the Works Progress Administration are so valuable, such great resources for the golf world, because so many of them are built on pieces of land that we would just, the public would no longer have access to anymore. And they're still there. They just need a little bit of help, a little bit of capital, a little bit of support. And that's definitely easier said than done.
Yeah, forward thinking too.
Yeah, that's tough in city government, yeah, right? People are dealing with really immediate, and I'd sympathize with this. City governments are dealing with a lot of really immediate problems. I mean, I think if you're a council person in the Cleveland area, are you really thinking about golf all that much? Maybe not, or in Winston-Salem for that matter. But I think that if you take the long view and you see the potential of these places, that kind of work on golf courses, that sort of input, could be a real value to many communities.
Yeah. I think there's an opportunity. I think if this Cobb Creek thing goes well, which I did a podcast on with Joe Bosch and Mike Serba.
And Philadelphia.
Yeah, where they've gotten a private lease and it's privately funded, and you know, but it's going to remain essentially run like a municipal would be run, in the sense that it's for the people. I think if that can be a big smashing success, it could really change the future for a lot of these places.
Yeah, domino effect.
Yeah,
and I think what we'd hope for.
Yeah, and also, you know, Washington D.C. with East Potomac would be another example.
Right. The hope is that we've seen in the past 15 to 20 years a restoration movement in the private club sector. And the hope is that that would move eventually to public access golf. But that's a very difficult transition.
Now for a quick word from our sponsor. This weekend, Kaylee, Mrs. Friedegg, took her first golf lesson up in Kohler. I was quite worried. It was very brisk afternoon, and she doesn't do well with the cold. And she was nervous about the golf lesson. I was more nervous about the weather. Thankfully, she was suited up in her zero restriction. So she had on her Laura hoodie, and then she had a ZR vest on, and amazingly, no complaints of cold until we were driving back in the cart, and that was it. It was, the sun was down at that point. It was really cold, but it really was great. She had an awesome time with her lesson, and had no problems with the apparel she chose. So it's one of the reasons ZR got picked by Tiger Woods to be the official rain gear of the President's Cup team, which is coming up. So go get some ZR gear if you don't have any yet. Get some from your local pro shop, or buy it online at zerorestriction.com. Now back to our podcast.
But it's funny because, you know, right after we saw Reynolds Park, this great candidate for restoration, we went over to Old Town Club, which represents, I think, many of the best aspects of the private club restoration movement. We got over to Old Town Club that evening after we had seen Reynolds Park. And once again, you know, this was another really pleasant surprise, immediately taken by this course. What were some of your first impressions of it?
Well, it was just interesting because we went from a course where you're like, wow, this thing could be really, really great, you know, to a course that, like, right down the road, that essentially is what Reynolds Park could be. You know, it was like looking, you're walking up, and it's like, yep, this is what it is. I think I mean, Old Town Club, 2 years ago, I started doing this because it's hard because there's so many places I want to go see in given years. And I started to make lists of five courses that I wanted to see, like, and they'd be in different parts of the country. So, because knowing that, like, you go one of these places, you're going to see some other stuff while you're there. And, like, 2 years ago, I had Old Town, like, on this list, and I didn't get there that year. And then we were getting to the end of this year, and I was like, I got to get there. So it was great to finally see it. It lived up to all my expectations. It's just amazing. It's an amazing golf course, especially, I mean, it's just stunning to see. I think in terms of all the places we played, it's the most Maxwell. Like, in comparison to Southern Hills and Prairie Dunes, there's more Maxwell preserved and showing at Old Town than anywhere else. Like, they've got it all the way. You know, it's one of the courses that is getting the most out of its course that I've seen, you know, from a standpoint of presentation. Like, you don't walk around there and say, like, oh, if they did this, it would really bump it. It's like, it's pretty maxed out as to, you know, like, it's great.
They've gotten there. Yeah, it was really cool to see a course kind of fulfilling its potential in that way. And just to give a little background on Old Town Club, it was built in early 1939 by Perry Maxwell. So 1939 is quite late in the Golden Age. In fact, many people would say Old Town Club is the last great work of the Golden Age of golf course architecture. And so in that sense, it's already of historical interest, but it was built after Prairie Dunes, after Southern Hills. This is Perry Maxwell, maybe at his most mature. And then, you know, through the years, Old Town Club, I think, was always regarded as a really good course. But it lost some of its initial character in the usual ways, you know, that a lot of tree planting and kind of
shrinking greens.
Yeah, more conformity in the mowing lines and the bunker shapes and all that kind of stuff. And so in 2013, after what sounds like years of activism on the part of Dunlop White, who's currently the golf chairman at Old Town Club, the club hired Bill Corr and Ben Crenshaw to come in and restore the course essentially to the form that it's in now. And Bill Corr still visits the place and gives suggestions. It's an ongoing process, but it truly is a wonderful restoration. Okay, one of the remarkable things about Old Town is its land, right? And I've been struggling to come up with a way to describe this land, because it's not like Prairie Dunes, it's not like Southern Hills, you know, it's something else. It's maybe in between those two in some way or another. How would you describe what the topography is like out there?
So it's clay-based soil, so it's not like Prairie Dunes is sand, and it's not like sand. It's just, I don't know how to explain it, to be honest. It's very muscular. It's got these big landforms that you play over, but at the same time, it's a very small piece of land, right? Everything is really packed into there. And the way the course plays, you play the first three out. You play on one side of the clubhouse, and then you go back to the other side. And the fourth hole plays up this crest. And you don't really see, from the clubhouse and from the first three holes, you don't really know what's coming up. But then you play the fourth hole, and you crest this hill. And it's just like an open expanse of golf. And you've got creeks that run through it that are similar to the way Southern Hills has the dominant creek that runs through it. And, the river kind of, it's a big riverbed essentially. And then, Yeah, it's just, it's a very oddly shaped property too. That's the thing, is that I remember Bill Corr talking about this when I interviewed him, because he said Old Town Club was one of, you know, the most impactful courses he'd ever, you know, he visited early, and I asked why. He goes, how he fit 18 holes on that property, the way it's shaped and how severe it is truly remarkable. And like then going out and seeing it, and that's like one of the reasons I wanted to see Old Town so bad was what Bill Corr said on the podcast about it. And I just don't think a lot of architects would have been able to get, like, if you gave them that site with nothing on it, I don't think a lot of architects would be able to get 18 great holes on it.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's a weird site. It's not only kind of compact, but it's also got odd landforms on it.
Yeah.
And Maxwell actually turned that to an advantage, right? He took these really abrupt, severe landforms that maybe most architects would avoid, and he routed holes over them that really work.
Yeah. And it's got all those corners.
Yeah.
So it's got like a corner at where one and two are, where like one green and two plays into. Then it's got a corner where 5 green and 6 tee is. And then it's got another corner where 10 plays into. And then it's got where 11, like it's just like there are probably 8 corners of the property that the course goes to.
Right. There must have been a lot of points in the routing where it looked like before the golf course was built, there was nowhere to go.
Yeah.
When you got back to, say, the 15th green, the par 3 that goes back into one of these corners and get to the 16th tee, who would think of routing the 16th hole, this par 4 that goes over two big ridges to a green perched on top of the second ridge? Who would think of routing that golf hole? When you look at it, it looks incredible, and it works, right? It plays really well, but I don't think many architects would have the daring to put that hole there and not move much land, which is something that Perry Maxwell never did, right? He just didn't move a whole lot of land. And those holes go over landforms that most architects would eliminate. Yeah.
He didn't just not move land. He was anybody that moved land, the steam shovel hater.
He was a fanatic about it. Yeah. He subtweeted Langford and Moreau pretty much constantly in every public utterance he made.
We think it was like for Moreau. I mean, it would match.
It's got to be, right?
Yeah, they were working in the same region of the country at the same
totally.
Time. And they had
it's gotta be.
Two completely wildly different styles.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But at the same time, they shared a lot of the same things. Like Langford Moreau, the way they routed golf courses, to me, is very similar. Like the way they used landforms was very similar to the way Perry Maxwell, where they would drape them over these big contours and use the big contours but they were just so wildly different at the green, you know, and building hazards. But I think that in terms of routing, there's a lot, and I think that might be part of, like, those two guys, they learned from the fact that they worked on all these sites that were really tough sites in the Midwest and, you know, the Great Plains, and they did not. That's the thing why Perry Maxwell amazes me so much, is because he was given so much less than so many other architects with what he had to start to work from, whether it was, you know, building in the middle of the Great Depression, where you just have less to work with in general, or from the sites and the soils that he worked on, as opposed to if you got to work on Long Island exclusively, like you're building on sand, like, you know, it's a little bit different than building on, you know, North Carolina clay.
Yeah, and we've seen some of the best sites that he got to work on too, right? Prairie Dunes obviously was a blessed site, and that's why that golf course is special, because you get Perry Maxwell working on that kind of site. You can't get anything but one of the best golf courses in the world, which those original nine holes, I think that certainly are. Old Town's got some cool features in it. It's got a varied landscape. And so the holes are different from each other, instantly memorable. No hole is anywhere near being like any other hole on that course. And that's partly because of the variety of landforms, but also it's a credit to the genius of the routing.
All right. So, one of my favorite questions with a course, especially for a course like Old Town, is everybody always, what's your favorite hole? What's the weakest hole at Old Town?
See, I was just thinking, not specifically about that question, but about Old Town's weaknesses. And I was thinking that one of the things that was distinctive about Old Town is that it has very, very few weaknesses. Right? It is, yeah. When we talked about Prairie Dunes a month or two ago on the podcast, I think both of us could easily identify some weaknesses in that golf course. I think that Southern Hills might have some weaknesses as well that are explained by the nature of the land, but the par threes at Southern Hills aren't exactly the most memorable holes at that course. I think to an extent you could say the same at Old Town, where when you think about the best holes at Old Town, almost all of them that immediately come to mind are par fours and par fives, the long holes. And so, you know, if there's any critique I think I'd make, it's that the par threes don't stand out quite as much, but the par threes are really good. You know, like they're very, very good golf holes. And they're not dull by any stretch of the imagination. They just don't quite rise to the level of the others. Other than that, I'd have a really hard time identifying the weakest hole. Maybe the 15th hole. I don't know. That has a cool green though. That's
really
a great
neat green.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know.
It's kind of cool how the par threes build. One of the things that it does at Old Town is they build, like they start with the shortest one is number two, then number six is a little bit longer. I think it plays about 170. Number two plays like 150 or 145. And then number 11 plays 210. And then number five is like 240, you know, or
and they're all
15.
In different directions, right? They're all facing different directions. Yeah. I mean, they're still well designed. Maybe the weakest hole at the course is number 18. Maybe that would be it.
That green's awesome though.
It's a great green. I know. So what do you think is the weakest hole at Old Town? What do you think? Number one? No, number one is great.
One's cool.
So yeah.
I don't know. I see it. That's why I asked you. I didn't want to answer this question.
Right. Exactly. I think that is exactly one of the distinctive things about Old Town, though, is that it's really hard to identify weaknesses of the course, either among the holes, weak links in the routing, and it's also tough at this point after the work that Corin Crenshaw have done there. It's tough to identify weaknesses in the presentation and setup of the course. That's pretty strong all around too.
I loved, there are some things about the restoration that I like really, really loved is that the aesthetics of it, like the sand, just like even the sand color, the choice of the sand color is, it just like shows that they knew what they were going for. Like you see so many clubs do these restorations and you know, they put the white sand in, the bright white sand in, and it's like, it just doesn't fit. You're trying to restore your court. Like, and it takes out of like, it makes it less of a hazard. It's like the perfect lie. It's just designed to make it easy. And at Old Town, they got this just like, this orange sand, not orange, but like I'm colorblind, so I can't even tell you what color it is really, but like it's like this like brownish.
It's sort of, yeah, it's browner. It's darker in color than the blinding white sand that you see a lot of different places.
And
rockier too. Like there's, you know, they're not afraid of not having it be perfectly pillowy fine all the way through.
And I almost always like, I go places, like one that sticks out in my head is like Inverness. I went there and you know, they did the restoration, and you just like look around and you're like, God, there should be so much more fairway. Like you just see the land, like right where the fairway should be. And it's not because they're chasing championship golf, but like, you know, at the same time, it's like, this is a members golf course. Like that landform screams fairway, you know, because you see right where the fairway line was. And at Old Town, never once, not once in the whole, you know, 2 days there, did I ever look and be like, you know, they could add fairway here. Like it is, they actually have the lines out to where I think it's right. And where, yeah, you know, like it's restored back to what the fairway widths were back in the day.
The fairway goes all the way to the native, basically.
Yeah.
There is some maintained rough out there, but in, right?
Yeah,
Right. Yeah. Well, that's funny because I can't even really remember where it might be, maybe between numbers 1 and 3. But the fairway in a lot of places just goes right up to the native areas, and the native areas are really good. You know, there are a lot of places where you would lose a golf ball, but in the native areas that are actually in play, they're cultivated really well, so that, you know, it's an unpredictable penalty hitting into there. You might not lose your golf ball in a lot of places. You might find it, but you also might find yourself in funny positions, or there might be an opening for you to go for it from there. So in that sense, they do even a good job off of the golf holes maintaining the course.
Yeah. And the impact that fairway has, you know, we've talked a lot about these like massive landforms that the course is routed over. You know, a lot of times you'll have this severe topography either running right down the center of the fairway where it acts like a hog's back, where if you don't hit it right in the right space, it's going to shoot your ball right or left, you know. And what the fairway does is it's the best thing ever in golf is when the ball lands, that's when it gets really exciting because you don't know where it's going to end up. And so many of these holes, well, whether it's, you know, having a big landform on one half of it and having a cascade down to the left or to the right or down the middle and having it, what it does is it makes the fairways are huge, but hitting it to the right spot in the fairways is so difficult because of the slopes and the short grass. The ball, it's just, you know, when the ball hits the ground, that's when all the, you know, it's not done.
Right. And it was bouncy out there when we played too, even though it was toward the end of what would usually be considered the prime golf season. The ball was really taking leaps off of the turf when it landed. And that combined with the bold slopes of the fairways at Old Town Club, which you were mentioning earlier. There's hogsback fairways, there are fairways with high sides and low sides, fairways that go uphill, that go downhill. There's fairways that bounce off one hill and then bounce off another hill. I mean, there's just all sorts of things that the short grass covers there at Old Town where the ball can run and bound and make all these crazy moves. You combine that with really good firm conditioning, and you've got the golf course, I think, as it was really intended to play.
Yeah, yeah, it's awesome. I mean, there was the third hole. It was the third hole is like the perfect illustration because we both, you played it absolutely perfectly, and I like kind of chickened out, and the third hole plays back up to the clubhouse, and the fairway cants from right to left. And there's two intimidating bunkers set into the right side of the fairway. And that's right where you want to be. From there, you're going to get the flattest lie and have the best look and best angle into the green. And, you know, if the fairway's really wide, right? And Garrett hit like this beautiful little cut right up the right side and had, it was in the perfect spot, and I hit mine right up the middle. And what happened was it just bounded like probably 40 yards left of where it landed. into just, it just rolled into the rough. And all of a sudden I had a semi-blind wedge shot from a fly or lie into a green from like a very poor angle, you know, an uphill green from a poor angle. And it was, you know, granted, like, people are always going to look at like the result one time, but that it was just a stressful shot. And over the course of a round, all you're trying to do, if you're really trying to score, is you're trying to reduce stress, not put stress into your round. And, you know, I hit a fine shot, but it just was not a comfortable shot, right? And that's the thing, is that over those things compound over the round. If you don't get it into the right position out there, you're going to be faced with a much more difficult shot.
Right. And what amplified the difference between your way of playing that hole in that one round and my path to the hole is that the pin was just on the other side of what we've been calling a Maxwell muffin, right? Just this little subtle mound in the putting surface. A lot of the greens at Old Town have these features where it's just a simple green, but there's one little mound that a lot of pin positions can play off of. Dunlop White refers to these, Dunlop White, the golf chairman at Old Town, refers to these as muffins in the greens. And so when I played my shot into that green, I was up on the level with the green. It was a pretty easy shot, really. I just, you know, hit a nice easy shot and it got to the other side of this mound in the putting surface.
Could you see the mound?
Yes. So I could see, right. Yeah. I could see everything on the green, right? I mean, it was a ways away, a little bit elevated. I couldn't see it perfectly, but I had a comfortable vision of the green. And, you know, so one thing is seeing it, but
I couldn't even see it. So I couldn't see where the pin was in relation to that muffin. And when I hit my shot, I thought it was perfect, but I was just under the muffin. So I was putting up and over. And you were over on the other side of it.
I had a flat putt.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I had an easy putt, and your putt was up and over that mound, which is very, very difficult, because if you're a little bit left, it goes left. If you're a little bit right, it goes right. You have to judge the speed just right. You know, we may have had even like a similar length of putt, because I hit a much longer club into the green than you did, for one thing. But just because of the position on the green, one shot was a lot easier than the other. And I think that's so important. And it's such a smart design feature there, because if the green were just flat, there wouldn't have been that much of a difference between your angle into the green and my angle into the green. You would have hit your good wedge like you usually hit. Doesn't matter if you can see the green or not, you're going to get it up there within about 20 feet most of the time. And if the green is flat, you'll have basically the same putt that I would have. But that wasn't the case. And by the way, this is just this is probably the one hole that I played better than Andy during our round at Old Town, which is maybe why it was memorable. But it was a good illustration of what the hole does, for sure.
Those greens are so cool. The rolls are just, we talked about this the last time we talked about Maxwell, but they're just amazing because they just bring so much thought. I like found myself like just having so much fun on and around the greens, because you start to figure out like the key to those greens is you just have to find the high points of the muffins, right? And you have to read everything off of that and what part of the muffin you're putting over. And it kind of unlocks, and then all of a sudden it's so fun, because like you're just looking at all these different shots and the different ways you can play shots off these things, especially when you're chipping. I mean, it's just a really, really neat place. It's a golf course. That's a place. And the other thing about it is the club's it's very relaxed place. You know, it's a very golf centric place.
Yes. Yeah. The lounge was a cool place to hang out. There are people who are just there having a good time. You know, we had good talks with people and, always felt welcome, and like we could walk around the golf course and nobody really cared. And so a great place to hang out. And yeah, just a tremendously fun golf course to play. I feel like it's pretty underrated. I don't know. Would you, it gets ranked on these lists and stuff. I think people recognize that it's a great course, but to me, it just feels like it's on a level with other courses that consistently get ranked higher or that are discussed more. Do you get the sense that it's a bit underrated in the discussion right now?
I do. I think it's just where it is.
Yeah.
It's just this effect of it. To me, if it was in a major city, I mean, it's as good as anything. I mean, I'm sitting in a major city and it's as good as anything here. If not better. And, you go down there, they're just, you know, I think part of it's due to the way the rankings are done, like Golf Digest specifically, like you could dock it down for, you know, protecting par or whatever they're, you know, I mean, essentially they have like four of their eight or nine categories are devoted to difficulty. So like, that's how I could see it getting bumped down there. It's really well ranked, I think, in the Golf Week rankings. I think it's like 19 or 20, and that's of in classic courses, and that you know, the courses around it I would associate with like where it should be. But in terms of the golf, I don't think it's even in the top 100 of the Golf Digest rankings, which is it's absolutely insane. I mean,
yeah, I mean, I wasn't even talking about the rankings so much as because
I just don't think
it was more just the do people talk about it as a great course that often? Maybe it's because it just doesn't get visited even among people who go to a lot of private courses to play.
It's the same thing. Like Cal Club is a good comparison. It gets talked about a ton, and it's in because it's in San Francisco, right? I think that Old Town's got a little bit more variety. The routing's a little bit more creative. The sites are actually kind of similar.
Yeah, Cal Club's a decent comparison, right? Where both courses are sort of meeting their potential right now. Mm-hmm. You don't play those courses and think like, oh man, they didn't do enough there, or they kind of screwed that up. You go around thinking, wow, there was really good restoration / renovation work done here. But yeah, I would say just straight out, the golf holes at Old Town are better.
Yeah.
They're better golf holes.
I'd agree with that. But it's like the, you know, of course, you know, how often are people in Winston-Salem? That's the thing. That's why it doesn't get talked about as much. It's only an hour and 20 from Charlotte, which, you know, but I've heard that North Carolina is not the South, you know, but I'd equate it to the South, you know. I wouldn't mm-hmm. say it's mid-Atlantic. I mean, it's
yeah.
The people.
I'm definitely not an expert in that. Who says that North Carolina is not part of the South?
Somebody from the South, you know.
Okay,
people, I see. People from the South. I'm interested to hear people's opinion, but then people will say, "Oh, Holston Hills is in the South. Knoxville and Winston-Salem are essentially on the same latitude line, or is it longitude? Longitude.
It's longitude. Yeah. Well, is it? No. Wait. I, you know, this is not something actually that we should debate, because I'm going to be wrong either way. But anyway, it's who cares really? But maybe it's more cultural than geographic. In any case, it's close to a lot of places. It's close enough that a lot of folks can get to this course. And if you have the opportunity to do it, I think it's you've clearly got to get out there and see this place.
Yeah, it's a must see. I mean, it's arguably the best Perry Maxwell design.
Well, that's what I was just going to ask. You know, we we were really lucky this summer to get to see some great Perry Maxwell golf courses, to see Prairie Dunes and play that several times, and then to get out to Southern Hills. Is it worth comparing Old Town to those two? Would that be illuminating, or would that just be a flimsy exercise?
I think it's tough to compare. I think they're all trying to be a little bit different things, right?
I agree.
I think they're all in different situations.
Prairie Dunes, there are some similarities between Prairie Dunes in terms of the club and the location. Not really, though. Prairie Dunes is so much more isolated. But I just see maybe some parallels between what those courses could be. You know, if Prairie Dunes were to get those mowing lines where it seems like they should be, and kind of complete its full restoration, it would be absolutely sensational. And it's on a better piece of land than Old Town, and it probably has a much higher ceiling than Old Town, you could argue.
Yeah.
But what you see at Old Town is, as we've said several times, a course meeting its full potential. And so if you're looking for inspiration for how Prairie Dunes could meet its very significant, very substantial potential, then Old Town would be a good example of where that could go.
Yeah, like every single person that's a member at a Perry Maxwell course that's on, like a Greens Committee chairman, should be going to Old Town to see. It's like, this is what you have.
Exactly.
You know? And it... Reynolds Park, I mean, that's the thing. Reynolds Park, just be the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's a remarkable place.
Yeah. Old Town Club is great.
I wish there were Perry Maxwell's up here in Chicago. We got fairways, which is a nine hole Maxwell. It's probably got like three holes of Maxwell left. It's like an hour from me, but
I'm pretty sure that's more than Portland, Oregon has. So at least it's something.